in the middle of your Bible, if you don't have too many maps and concordances and all that back there, right after Psalms, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. Before we get out of this book, your Bible will fall open to it. Now I'd like to read the first 11 verses of Ecclesiastes. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does a man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun also rises, and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises again. Blowing toward the south and turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along and on its circular course, and the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear with hearing. That which has been is that which shall be, and that which has been done is that which shall be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which we might say, see, this is new? Already it existed for ages, which were before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things, and also the latter things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Social scientists in Johns Hopkins University surveyed nearly 8,000 students. They asked them the question, what are the most important issues of life? What do you consider to be the most important thing? Not surprisingly, 16% said making money. And that's not unusual, because that's why people go to college, mainly. That's why colleges will advertise. If you don't get a high school diploma, you make this much. So they go there for that reason. But that should not be the main reason. And what they asked for was the most important reason. Surprisingly, though, 75% said to find the meaning and purpose in life. Now, Ray has already told us what the significance of man is. He gave us that a few weeks ago. But here we want to find out what Solomon says and what Solomon found in his search for life. Rick Warren, in his book, Purpose-Driven Life, struck the same theme. You know what happened there. That book is a super runaway bestseller because people want to know. Well, he said in his book that Dr. Hugh Moorhead wrote to 250 leading intellectuals and scientists, and he asked, what is the meaning of life? And he was going to put their answers in a book. And he got from some, well, I guess this and I guess that. And others said, well, I make up stuff as I go along, whatever fits, you know. And others said, real plainly, not a clue. I don't have the slightest idea. And then many of them wrote back and said, if you do find out, please write and let me know. These are the intellectuals. These are the scientists. If you find out, let me know. One college student wrote before taking his own life, he said, to anyone who cares, who am I? Why am I living? Life has become stupid and purposeless. Nothing makes sense to me anymore. The questions that I had when I came to college are still unanswered, and I'm convinced there is no answer. There can be only pain and guilt and despair in this world. My fear of death and the unknown is far less terrifying than the prospect of this unbearable frustration, futility, and hopelessness of continued existence. There's a need for knowing. What is the purpose of life? In Ecclesiastes, Solomon relates his own search for this purpose. In the book, he tells us not only the search, but he tells us his conclusion. Now, you don't have to go way back. We'll talk about this later, but you don't have to go way back and read the last chapter. I forbid. Now, you don't have to do that. He's going to tell us. Now, Solomon wrote three books, as you know. He wrote the book on romance in his early life. That seems to fit, doesn't it? In his early life, romance. In his middle life, he wrote a book on rules, and that fits too. When you get a little older, you know, here, do this and this and this. These are the rules. Well, that's Proverbs, you know, in his middle life. Then he wrote a book of regrets. That's what this book is. Book of Regrets, Ecclesiastes, and this came in his later life. Ecclesiastes, the word means the gathering. It's the word from which we get our word. It's a Greek word. We get our word church from it, ecclesia. But it's the gathering is what the word means. And the writer identifies himself as Kohelet. Kohelet is the preacher or the gathering man, the assembly man, if you will. He says also that he was son of David and king in Jerusalem. Now, if it's Solomon, and we believe it is, then he really is qualified to write this book. He had all the time that he needed. Remember, David was busy fighting and doing all the enemies of Israel, and he was back here and bow there, and he solidified the kingdom so that when Solomon came along, Solomon could live in peace. And so he had plenty of time to pursue this pastime of finding out what is life all about. So he looked. He also had the money. He was a very rich man. Maybe the richest man who ever lived, but at least very rich. I'm saying maybe because I don't know. I haven't read that anywhere for sure in the Bible. And he also had wisdom. If you want somebody to tell you about the meaning of life, at least find somebody who's smart. He's smart. He's the wisest man, and he is the wisest man who ever lived. 1 Kings 3:12 said, "Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart." That's God saying to Solomon, "I've given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there is none, no one like you before you, and shall be no one like to arise after you." So he's the wisest man who ever lived, no matter who it is, before or after. So he starts out really by giving the results of his search. This keeps us from going back there and reading the last chapter. But he's giving us the what he has learned. Now, that's a proper way to write. It's a proper way to speak. You start off by telling them what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them, and then you tell them what you just told them. That's good speaking. That's good review for everybody. So he's really piquing their interests. They're vanity of vanities, all is vanity. When you say vanity of vanities, that's a double saying the word twice. And in Hebrews, the Hebrew writings, that means extra special vanity. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, what does he mean by vanity? Vanity? Well, we know what vanity is. You stand in front of a mirror. Hey, that's vanity, right? Well, a woman told her pastor, "Pastor, I am guilty of a great sin." And he said, "Well, what sin is that?" He said, "I am guilty of vanity. Now, I stand in front of my mirror for a half hour every morning, looking at myself and admiring myself." And the preacher said, "You're not guilty of the sin of vanity. You're guilty of the sin of imagination." I'm sorry. I remember that word right now. The sin of imagination. You don't want to blow the last line. Anyway, but that's not the vanity he's talking about here. The writer called it vanity. One man called it soap bubbles. You know, it just soap bubbles. You blow bubbles and they're gone. Well, that's what it is. James calls it like a flower of the grass. It just fades away. Vanity. All he's saying is in 3a he said, "Man's work gains him nothing. For what profit is it?" What's the word profit means? What's left over after a man works all of his life and he works hard with his hands, and he gets on the end, what's left over? Nothing. Not a thing. And if you have something, you can't take it with you. You know, was it Billy Graham, I think, said, You never saw a hearse with a U-Haul behind it. We were riding down the highway, Melanie and I, and I said, look, look. I wonder if she's asleep or what. Look, there's a hearse with a U-Haul. Billy Graham's wrong. We saw one with that. But they weren't taking anything with them, I'll guarantee you that. So you can't do it. There's nothing there. There used to be a motto on our wall when I was at home, and it said, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. See, that's what you do. That's what you take with you, what you've done for others, what you've done for the Lord. You take that with you, that's all you take. Not even the clothes on your back. Nothing. Timothy says this way, or Paul to Timothy, we brought nothing into this world, and we're not going to take anything out of this world. Not one thing. Now, the interpretation of the book. What are the three rules for interpretation? Let's see, the first one is context. What's the second one? Context. What's the third one? Context. We have to look at the context. This book is very, very misunderstood book, because there are a lot of things in here that doctrines that they think they find here, and they're wrong. For instance, in 9:5, he says, the dead know not anything. Well, then the dead, if they know not anything, they must still be in the ground. And so the doctrine of soul sleep comes out. Oh, the dead know not anything, therefore soul is sleeping, they don't know anything until the rapture. See? Wrong. Yeah. Why? Well, because the phrase under the sun, he says in verse 3, what advantage does a man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? When he says under the sun, he's talking about apart from God. All that he sees under the sun is apart from God, and that's where he's searching. He's searching under the sun. If he included over the sun, he would include God, and God would have the answers. But no, he's doing it under the sun. He's searching for meaning apart from God under the sun. And now he gives the results. He's speaking for a majority of people that you know, a majority of your relatives he's speaking for. And he's saying, these people will say, that's right. I know that. There's nothing there. There's a futility in life. He says in 4:7, in verses 4 through 7, in verse 4, he starts talking about the things that don't make sense. Verse 4, he says, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Have you noticed that? Of course you have. When you used to go to family reunions, you were the little kid. Everybody's patting you on the head. Isn't he sweet? You know. That's what it used to be. Then you came along, you moved up, and you were the parent of that little kid. And there were the older people there, and they were patting your little grandkid on the head, and you moved up, and finally you're the old man. You're sitting over in the corner. You can't play football with all the guys. You sit over in the corner, and pretty soon you're gone. See? A generation comes, a generation goes, and that's it. Yeah. Well, it may be that Solomon was reading the newspaper. You know, maybe he read the births and he read the deaths. My mother used to do that. She was 90, in her 90s. She would get the newspaper. First thing she did was look at the obituaries. I'm older than that woman. She loved that. Well, that happens, you know. People live, are born, and then somebody else dies. And it's a vicious cycle. And that's what he sees. He said a generation comes, a generation goes, and nothing happens. Just same old thing. He's thinking about death because he's old. I'll tell you, when you get old, you start thinking about death. You get a pain. Oh, is that it? No, it's not it. Just a bubble down there. No, not it. But you think about that. But people don't want to do that. Most people don't want to think about death. No, let's not think about that. I think that if I were to preach on the genealogies next Sunday, we're going to quit this. We're going to go to genealogies. We'll go to Genesis chapter 5. And I'll read all this, and he begat him, and he begat him. Don't want to think about that, because you know what happens after each one of those? He begat him, and then he died. And he begat him, and then he died. You know? That's death. No one here, I think you'd say home. I think the rest of these people over here would say home too, back in the back. It happens, you know, because people don't want to talk about death. They want to think about it. So Solomon's thinking about death as he nears his own death. And he says, how quickly people are forgotten. Do you ever notice that? People, when they die, they're forgotten. First couple of weeks when Peanut died, I felt like, oh, better call Peanut. I'd call him two or three times a week. And we'd talk about all kinds of things. And I just like talking to Peanut, the last one. You know, I don't reach for the phone anymore. Peanut's gone. You know, well, that can happen. And it's with other people, the people that you work with, you know, well, they were here last week and they died. Give them a month and they wouldn't even notice that he's gone. You know, somebody else is in his spot. He's doing a job, probably doing it better. Gone. So, it's a vicious cycle. There was a song some time ago. Is that all there is? If you remember it, you're older than I. No, that's in fact, I heard a guy speaking one time about on this subject, and he mentioned that. Is that all there is? If that's all there is, let's keep on dancing. I couldn't find that. I couldn't find out who did that. But anyway, it was there, and some of you are saying this. And yeah. If that's all there is, let's just keep on dancing. There's nothing else. Well, that's the course of life. There's no meaning to it. Then there's a circle of the sun, verse 5. He said, the sun also rises. Did that bring any ideas to you? Remember the book, Sun Also Rises? Hemingway? Yeah. Well, the sun also rises. And the sun sets. And then it hastens to its place and rises there again. The sun rises. It rises in the east, of course. I did hear about a guy one time who said, they were having an argument. He said, hey, where does the sun rise? He said, I don't know. I don't live around here. Well, wherever you live, the sun rises. It rises in the east. And then it sets in the west. When I walk just before the sunrise, I see it beginning to rise. And sometimes, depending on the time of year, I walk when it's setting. Well, and it's every time. And I marvel sometimes how everything is exactly the same. I mean, it will be different times, but it's always there. It always rises. You can bet on that. If it's cloudy, well, the sun was there, and it's there somewhere doing its thing. You know? And he says, the sun rises, and then the sun sets. But I like this part here, the last part. And it hastens to its place and rises there again. You think Solomon has some picture, some idea about that. The sun is always rising in the east, and it's there all the time. He didn't know that the earth was round. Copernicus hadn't told him that. And so the sun, he says, it rises in the east and goes down to the west, and then hastens, and the word there, hasten, is pants. It pants back to its place and get over there so it can rise again. Yeah? It's all the same thing. That's what he's saying. It hastens to its place and then rises back, goes back and rises in the east again. It never changes. Life is meaningless. So he had the course of life, he had the circle of the sun, and then the circuit of the winds. The wind continues swirling along, he says, and on its circular courses, the wind returns. Now, how did Solomon know this? He was very smart. He didn't know it because he read it somewhere, but he observed that the winds swirl around, and winds are in some kind of a circular motion. See? He didn't know that from TV. I think probably his TV didn't have the jet stream on it, you know. Probably black and white anyway, but he didn't know this from TV. He observed it, see, all the way. So the circuit of the winds he saw meaningless all the time, round, round, round. There you go. Then the cycle of the water. He said all rivers flow into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. The job is never done. If their job is to fill up the ocean, they're not getting it done. See? He didn't know about evaporation. He didn't know that the sun, the the sun evaporates the water, and the water comes up into the clouds, and the clouds come back over the land, it rains, and then the water flows into the ocean. He didn't know all of that, but he noticed that it happened, and it looked like their job is never done. It seems to Solomon that it's all meaningless. Do you ever have these thoughts? Do you ever think about that kind of thing? How meaningless things are. It can happen. Believers can think this. When we forget about God, when we get so wrapped up in our problems, and we think, oh, I go to work, I get up 5:30, go to work, I come in, I go home at 6, and just over and over and over. I was thinking just this morning, just that, man, it seems like Sunday hits here about every other day. We're moving through, and we do the same. Melanie's very busy, and I try to stay busy, but we're doing the same thing over and over and over. Well, that's what the believers can do. If you forget God, see, there's no point in things, no point in what everything. What am I doing here? I'm serving God. See, but Solomon didn't know that. Solomon had left that whole idea. On the other hand, you ever think of the rapture, the tribulation, the second coming? Do you know that in the tribulation, the sun rising and the moon and all that stuff is going to change? Yeah. Stars are going to fall to the ground. All kinds of things are going to happen that are going to change the course of nature. There won't be any boredom there, It's going to be, events are going to change the course. Well, that's going to happen, and I look forward to that, It's going to happen. One of these days, the rapture is going to occur. If you aren't careful, you'll fall into the trap of, they said that. I think John Wesley said that. And Paul was looking for that 2,000 years ago. Paul was saying, the Lord, the rapture is going to come any time now. 2,000 years later. And same thing. But we have the word, see. Peter talked about that, They'll say, what is the sign of his coming? Where is the sign of his coming? All things continue from the beginning as they have from the past. What are you going to do? Well, he said they are ignorant of what God is doing. And so it's going to happen. But all that is a futility of life. It's looking at everything, same thing. Then there's a frustration of life, verses 8 to 11. He says, all things, this is verse 8, nothing is fulfilling. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. You could say, life is boring. It's boring to the eyes, boring to the ears. It's boring. And Hollywood's job is to make life less boring. You ever notice that? You can sit in front of the TV, you forget the things around you. And when she says, so you didn't listen to me. Did you say something? you forget those things. But Hollywood tries to do that to us. They'll find something new and exciting, something bizarre that will occupy our bored and restless hearts. The person who doesn't have God in his life has to focus on other people. Oh, my life is so boring, but theirs is so exciting. The stars, the movie stars, the wealthy, the exciting. Yeah. We try to relieve our boredom by looking at them, and guess what? They're just as bored as we are. Wouldn't you like to be Britney Spears? Oh, that would be such a wonderful thing. Yeah. Or how about Paris Hilton? Wouldn't that be great? The star or the rich person? No. All of that is boring, and they're just as bored as we are. It reminds me of Acts chapter 17, verse 21, where Paul says concerning the Athenians, now all the Athenians and strangers were visiting there. They used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. And they said about Paul, what will this seed picker say? They're all seed pickers. What will he say? Let's go hear him. And so Paul got to hear him because he had something new. God came in the flesh. Jesus Christ came. And a man rose from the dead. That's brand new, see? In fact, they thought resurrection was some kind of a god. But that's what they were doing. They did that in Paul's day. They're doing it today. The new things. Bring out a new thing and everybody will flock to it. And everybody will copy it too. And there'll be three more programs just like that one. Yeah. Well, J. Vernon McGee used to say, if it's new, it's not true. And if it's true, it's not new. Well, I don't know about that, but that was his summary of all those things. Now, we try to get the bigger and better, you know. The bigger TV, the bigger car, the bigger house, the bigger computer. Then we find out somebody got one better, and once you drive that car around the block, it's worth $5,000 less. Yeah. And you get your computer, as Robert will tell you, you get your computer, and 2 weeks from now, somebody came out with something new. I'm working with a 03 Microsoft Word. Well, that's old now. It was really neat when I got it. Well, let's say always bigger, always better. Of course, that's the indication of our restlessness. We can't be satisfied because those things don't satisfy. Now, I'm going to see how old you are. Remember Chesterfields? Remember, heard your grandfather talk about Chesterfields? Well, my grandfather used to tell about them. Chesterfields, you know what their slogan was? They satisfy. Well, how come then after I put one out, I want to light another one? You know, it doesn't satisfy. Nothing satisfies. The key to satisfaction is found in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. It says this. We talked about this the other night. Be content with such things as you have. There it is. That's satisfaction. Be content with such things as you have. Why? The rest of the verse is, because he said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. See? Put your hope in the Lord, see? And the satisfaction will come. So, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Don't you believe it. Keeping up with the Joneses, he's trying to keep up with you. Remember that commercial? The guy says, I've got a big five-bedroom house and a big pool and a new car. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. He's probably in the poorhouse right now if I had all that. But that's what happens, you know. Going after everything. Well, nothing is fulfilling, he says. And then nothing is fresh, verses 9 to 11. That which has been, and that which will be, and that which has been done, is that which has been done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Nothing new. But I just talked about some new things, didn't I? TV? No. They're not new things. All they are is just taking the things that we have and shaping them and making them something for our use. Edison said, applying the secrets of nature for the happiness of mankind. That's what he did. Just applied the secrets of nature for the happiness of mankind. Rudyard Kipling said, I went on the internet and I found this. In his book, his poem, The Holy War, 1917, Kipling said, the craft that we call modern and the crimes that we call new, John Bunyan had them typed and filed in 1682. There's nothing new under the sun. Now, because nothing new is being created. God created everything in 6 days, six 24-hour days, and then he rested or ceased from his creation. He does create one thing now. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. God's creating there. But no things are being created. And so, we are simply rearranging what we have, giving them. So there's nothing new under the sun. And all of that was a frustration to Solomon. Now, what are we going to say then? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Nothing can satisfy the human heart except God. See? Now, this is a good message for unbelievers, right? Right. It's good for them. But listen, it's a good message for believers as well. It was written by a believer. It was written by a child of God. See, Solomon was God's man. Solomon was king over God's people, and he had lost sight of God. And that can happen. If we lose sight of God, we lose sight of what's important. He married foreign wives. Boy, did he marry wives. 700 of them, and 300 concubines. And he brought their gods to Jerusalem, and when he brought them in there, he set up shrines, and he would worship in the shrines with his wives. They led him astray. Having forgotten God, he came to his old age disillusioned and discouraged old man. That's what he was. And one of the keys that he finally reveals to us in his book is in 3:11, where he says, he made everything appropriate to its time. He has also set eternity in their heart. Someone has said that there's a God-shaped vacuum in man's heart, and only God can fill it. Oh, we try all kinds of things to fill that vacuum, but it's not there. We can't do it. Only God can fill the hole and satisfy the soul. So don't look for satisfaction under the sun, S-U-N. Look for satisfaction in the sun, S-O-N.